Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. If you were to somehow take the right-wing anti-gay propaganda machine seriously, absorbing the rhetoric spewing from talk radio, Fox News, countless websites, and far too many pulpits, you'd have to convince yourself that those of us who support the rights of our LGBTQ sisters and brothers, rights like, oh, you know, staying alive, the right to stay alive, have some secret master plan to take away the rights of everyone else and institute mandatory same-sex marriage for every single American. Well, there's a huge hole in this twisted reasoning. Let me ask you a question or two. What's in this for me? Here I am, a Baptist minister, married with children and grandchildren. What's in it for me? Do they seriously believe that I support anti-bullying programs, opposed, forced, and discredited ex-gay therapies, and have performed same-gender weddings because I hate America? What's in it for my producer, Ray Kirstein, who's working on this show in exile, far from home, in order to maintain a long-term relationship that, in the eyes of our federal government, deserves absolutely no respect nor protection? Well, closer to home, what's in it for you? If you'd like to see your gay child or sibling or parent or niece or nephew or neighbor survive to claim their piece of the American dream, does that mean you hate America? But that's the belief that you have to buy into if you're going to take seriously the pervasive, well-funded, and worst of all, kind-sounding voices of the anti-gay industry. It's a rusty old rhetorical device. When you can't win on message, impugn your opponent's motives. It's a timeless principle for warfare. Depersonalize your enemy. But the battle the right is waging now is killing our kids. And it doesn't matter one bit that they're doing it crassly in the name of love. Here to talk about his outstanding Religion Dispatches article on the subject is the Reverend Cody Sanders, a fellow Baptist minister who I can say with considerable confidence hates America about like I hate America. Not at all. Cody, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You wrote such a moving piece in response to the news of yet another gay youth suicide, Josh Pacheco, age 17, from Fenton, Michigan, who died on November 27th. The headline was Queer Suicide and the Malpractice of Love. Please talk about what moved you, inspired you to write that.
Well, the reality of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or just for shorthand queer people killing themselves has moved me for some time now. I mean, the national attention that it garnered around 2010 with that long string of highly publicized gay teen suicides started my public writing on the subject, and it's just continued in my public writing and my speaking and in my academic pursuits as well as a topic of research. I mean, this particular suicide is no different than the others that have come to light in the media, in the sense that it's a result of not only the physical violence that that many queer kids who are growing up in the United States face when they go to school or when they're out in their communities, but it also runs much deeper than that, and that's the reality that I'm trying to bring to the surface and bring into conversation in religious communities by these articles, that the violence against queer people is even more complex and detrimental than we often realize.
In reading about Josh's life, I was really struck by how supportive his family was, how many friends he had. I mean, this young man was not a lonely outcast, but still our society convinced him that there wasn't room for him among us. How does that happen?
Yeah, that's one of the troubling realities, is that in a lot of the media portrayals and film and literature, the queer figure has often been sort of cast as this loner, this exile, a person who has been rejected by parents and friends, who is vulnerable in every way. But that's not often the case with a lot of the queer people, kids and adults, who kill themselves. And to my mind, at least, this has to do with a type of violence against the queer self that runs much deeper than physical wounds. It's a type of violence that takes place at some levels that are difficult to see. The levels at which our sense of self is constructed, what we sometimes might refer to with the shorthand psyche or soul, and it's religious language about queer lives, which is still, as you pointed out, in its most vocal forms, denigrating to queer people, that informs the social language and the metaphors and the symbols that we have to make sense of queer lives. Mm-hmm. So it becomes part of the discourse on queer lives. In other words, it is religious language that purports to name something that is real and true about queer people. And often this message is that we are sick or sinful or appropriate objects of derision or scorn.
I want to read an excerpt from your article and then ask you a question. Violence against queer people runs much deeper than physical bullying, verbal harassment, or even hate crime, murder. It is a violence that takes place at the level of the psyche, the soul, at the very level at which our sense of self is constructed within our relation to society. Now, they're wonderful words. If that is a lesson our society has to learn, what grade are we in today, from kindergarten to senior high school, on the way to graduation and learning that lesson that you're teaching us?
Well, I don't think we've gotten very far with that particular lesson, probably somewhere in grade school still. We have done some really good things. There's really good work that's being done, particularly after that 2010 publicized string of gay teen suicides that was probably most public around the suicide of Tyler Clementi, the Rutgers student. I mean, there have been a lot of anti-bullying initiatives that have been instituted in schools in places that you might not even suspect that there is this kind of awareness and concern. And religious communities, communities of faith, have been behind supporting that. But it is still, I think in our consciousness, it is about the physicality of the violence, the kind of violence we can see and we can publicize in the media, hate crime, bullying, things of that nature. And addressing those concerns are vitally important. And I hope that our efforts will continue in that regard. But the furthering of that lesson is that these discourses, these religious ways of speaking about queer lives, become a part of the material that queer people then have available to them to sort of story our lives, to speak about ourselves. And even when we consciously disavow these denigrating messages that we are sick or sinful or whatever else, they are still sort of just out there in the social, the larger social discourse about queer people. So it's not just about the type of violence that religious discourse prompts or legitimates against queer people. It's about the violence that's done to the sense of self by the queer denigrating discourses themselves. Mm. And this is the key nuance that we really haven't often picked up on. Yeah. And it's the kind of nuance that I think is important when we talk about the lives of queer kids and the suicide of queer kids, because often it doesn't sort of add up in the way we often want to make sense of queer suicide.
Cody, you are merciless in your Religion Dispatches piece about the role of those who create the soul-killing environment so many LGBTQ people face, often tragically, in the name of saving souls. Talk about the kind of love needed to respond to that despicable action.
Well, you know, that's my point in the article, is that there is a flaw in the common good-hearted liberal notion that love is the answer, mm-hmm. And that best addresses the needs of queer people,
right.
Because there are people on all spectrums on this concern that purport to be acting in the name of or from the principle of love,
mm-hmm.
even practices like reparative therapy or conversion therapy that mm-hmm. purports to want to change the or sexual orientation of individuals in a sort of compassionate act of healing. I mean, that is said to be love by those practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of normalizing love that seeks to assimilate queer people into an established heterosexual and gender binary norm, to fix them or repair them. And there is, of course, the affirming type of love that we've come to see from a lot of religious communities, by which gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer people are seen as created in the image of God, as healthy, as whole, and are accommodated into practices of the church, into ordination, into marriage, into visibility in the community. But what I'm suggesting in the article is that we need to sort of revisit these practices of love, to reimagine these practices of love so that they are supported by a more robust notion of justice that takes into account the effects of multiple levels of violence experienced by queer people in our society. I kind of think about these multiple levels with the phrase fists with footnotes, in the sense that we are aware of the fists of bullies that attack queer lives on a daily basis in schools and society, but we often aren't aware of the footnotes that those fists come with.
Right.
The physical bullying and the violence is a citation of a larger social and religious discourse that, as I mentioned, names the queer self as sick or sinful or an object of disgust and derision. And the words don't even have to be said. We all already know the reasons that queer people become subjected to violence and bullying. And this kind of fists with footnotes mentality sort of hopefully opens our eyes to the other valences of violence that are enacted upon queer people.
Yeah. Well,
one is simply the psychic terror that is created by queer people knowing that always and everywhere they must be vigilant about the gestures, the touches, the revelations that they make about themselves and their loves, because they could at any point become sort of lightning rods for violence, for hate crime, for bullying. But the other valence that I'm pointing to in this article is that one never really has to become the victim of physical violence or bullying to be affected by the language and the symbolic world that we construct that makes this violence against queer bodies thinkable. The language and symbols themselves come to construct a sense of self for queer people in ways that damage and diminish the very sense of self that we hold so central to how we think about who we are as people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this type of violence that I think is important to bring to light when we talk about the reality, the grim reality of queer kids and queer adults killing themselves in our society.
Cody, I your answer, which is excellent, is why I asked the question the way I did about love, because there are indeed two ways of looking at love, and I don't have any doubt that you wrote this article out of love and compassion, and people ought to be able to see both kinds of love and look at the action that comes from it, and be able to discern which is authentic love and which has a long way to go to even get near the word love. I know from experience that most of our listeners feel the way we do about this. I want this conversation to be a call to action, a call for a new resolve, and a call to not pretend that the deadly messaging that creates the environment you describe in your article isn't happening every day in all of our neighborhoods.
Yeah.
The Reverend Cody J. Sanders is an ordained Baptist minister, a Ph.D. candidate in pastoral theology and pastoral care at Bright Divinity School in Fort Worth, Texas. He's editor of the forthcoming revised edition of Rightly Dividing the Word of Truth, a resource for congregations in dialogue on sexual orientation and gender identity. Cody, all I can say to you is not just thank you, but please keep up the work. And thanks so much for joining us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.